Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are on this beautiful planet, and welcome to the creative field. My name is Jeannie Martin, and I am your host here on BBSRadio.com every second Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The creative field is a program that offers, through its wonderful guests, creative solutions for a sustainable life on planet Earth, and to provide dialogue that focuses on what is possible. We believe that there is a gentle and beautiful way to live on this earth that will sustain all life and allow all life to thrive. And that's all life to thrive. The creative field is here because of our supporters, the Emissaries of Divine Light, British Columbia, and Edenvale Retreat and Conference Center here in Abbotsford, British Columbia, where I am talking to you from tonight. I live here at Edenvale, very blessed to be able to be on this beautiful land. And I just wanted to tell you maybe a little bit about Edenvale. Edenvale is a beautiful retreat and conference center in Abbotsford, British Columbia, just about 1 hour from Vancouver. It is on 117 acres of land that have never had a chemical on them. The birds live here year-round because of the untouched nature of the land. The forest walk is natural and filled with life. It's got such beautiful plants that I know some are rare. And the energy of Edenvale is like home. So if you would like to take a virtual tour of Edenvale, just visit the website at www.edenvaleretreat.ca. And have a look, and hopefully you have the opportunity sometime to come to Edenvale and join us in this beautiful place. I am really grateful to be able to share this time with individuals who live and work in the spirit of the possibility of sustaining life on planet Earth in many different ways. We all have our gifts, and the individuals that come on the creative field are using those gifts day by day on the ground. And my guest tonight, Brenda Falk.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me okay, Brenda?
I can, yes.
Yes, welcome. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
So, Brenda,
you're very welcome.
I'm really excited to be able to have this conversation, and for many different reasons, but one of the main reasons is I'm a city girl, and I've come out to the country because I have a country heart, but I don't know anything about planting and keeping plants alive or being able to plant, you know. It's like a brand new territory for me. And I know as I drive by Tangle Bank so many times and I look over into your property and my gosh, it's beautiful. It's truly beautiful.
Oh. Well, so thank you. It's not as hard as it looks.
Really? Oh,
it's not. Like, it's actually very easy. Anybody can do it.
That is good news.
Absolutely.
I thought we'd start tonight by first asking you, tell us about Tangle Bank, and how did you get such a love for gardening and planting?
Well, Tangle Bank actually is a family farm. We started it probably about, we moved here 24 years ago, and we started gardening this 20-acre piece of property. We had to fell the trees and clear it ourselves, so it's been a long process. We had the vision for a garden center and gardens that we would open up to the public in 1995, and we opened the garden center and the gardens in 1996. So it's just a family passion. Everybody in the family loves to garden, and it's just something that we do together.
Well, you know, it's always evolving. Every time I drive by, it's like this. It's like a painting.
Well, thank you. It is always evolving. That's the one thing about a garden is it's never static. It's always changing, always evolving, always growing.
Yeah, exactly. So I wonder, could you start maybe a little bit at the beginning? And here I am. I know nothing about gardening, and I know a lot of our listeners that are with us tonight live in the city. Maybe they don't know anything about gardening, but I'm one of those believers that really believe it's about time that we really did start to learn those basics of life, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's nothing more rewarding than planting and growing your own garden. It's just, it's very fun to watch things grow and to sprout and to, you know, they keep growing. Every year you plant a little seed, and every year that tree or that plant gets a little bigger and has a few more flowers on it or a few more pieces of fruit. And it's definitely a rewarding opportunity when you have the chance to garden. And it's really very, very simple. I always tell people the best thing to do is take a look at your site. Is it sunny? Is it shady? If it's shady, you might not be growing vegetables. If it's really hot and sunny, it might be the perfect place to grow vegetables or fruit trees. And, yeah, you really have to look at your site. You look at the like I said, the sun, the shade. What you want to look at is how many hours of sun it gets. If it gets 6 hours or more, it's full sun. If it gets a couple of hours, it's part sun. And if it gets relatively no sun or just bright light, then it's usually shade or part shade. And so you want to plant plants that are appropriate for the site you're growing in. So read tags, ask your nursery. And then the next thing you want to do is look at the site itself. How big is it? And I find probably the number one mistake I see in gardeners is that we want to plant a little, we want to plant some plants, so we dig a 1 foot bed along the side of our driveway, and it doesn't give you enough room to really plant anything. And so I always tell people, it's best to kind of think in thirds. So divide up a third of your front yard, and maybe if you've got a 15-foot front yard or a 25-foot yard, you're going to take about a third of that and make a nice bed and start there. One bed is all you need to start. And so basically you figure out where you want to plant and then pick plants that are going to grow in that site. I think the number two thing I see is I see people planting big trees in front of their living room windows. So I always tell people, read the tags. Those cute little big trees that you see, those cute little trees that you see in pots can become really big trees. And so we don't want to plant sequoias in front of our living room windows. So read tags. Find out how big they're going to get when you're picking your plants. I think that's probably the biggest thing.
So here's a question for you. What if you live, and like, can you get as much out of a raised garden that's in a box as you can as if you plant it in the ground?
Oh, absolutely. Plants don't really mind where they're planted as long as they get adequate moisture and good soil. And so the nice thing about raised planters is that they're easier to access, they're easier to weed, they're easier to cultivate. The downside is that they will, if it's a really hot site, they will use more water because they're more exposed to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But saying that, that's really a nice thing when you're planting sun-loving vegetables like tomatoes or cucumbers or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that can become a definite plus. And it's easier to add and amend the soil. And, yeah, so raised planters are definitely an easy way to garden.
I know I was also speaking to someone who said that you're very involved in water conservation with gardening. Is that right?
Yes, that is. I truly believe that in this day and age when we have to really watch where we use our water, because I believe that we want to be able to cook with it and drink it and support life with it, that we shouldn't be wasting it where we don't need to. Not to mention, as an avid gardener and a very large lot, I've discovered that it's way easier as a gardener if we choose plants that don't require a lot of water. So these days, there's a lot of plants on the market that really require very, very little water. I find that most people tend to overwater a garden or think that the garden needs more water than it actually does. And most lawns require about an inch of water a week. And if you plant a drought-tolerant garden, you can actually plant gardens.
My goodness, I am so sorry. Can you hear me? I don't know what happened.
I can. That was
a piece of equipment here.
Who
that
knows?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Brent.
That's okay. So basically what you can do is if we plant perennials that are drought tolerant, you can cut down on the amount of water to the point where we actually have gardens in our display gardens here in Abbotsford that we do not add any other water than what falls on it from the sky throughout the growing season. We add literally no water except when we first plant a plant. We will water that plant until it gets established in the garden. But once it's established, we don't add any water. So that makes my life a whole lot easier because I don't have to worry about dragging a hose across the yard and making sure that it's turned on and watered twice a week or once a week. Mm-hmm. So it makes your life as a gardener a whole lot easier as well.
Yeah.
And these days there's lots of nurseries that are getting on board and they're labeling their plants to whether they're if they love water or they don't. Whether they love sun or they don't. So it's making it easier and easier for the average person to find plants that don't need a lot of water.
Yeah,
saves everybody.
Mm-hmm. But tomatoes don't need much water. What about greenhouse planting as opposed to in the ground? Just say if you didn't have very much ground and you could put a little greenhouse. Same thing as the raised garden.
Greenhouses are a great way to extend your season. A lot of plants like a lot of heat, and normally on the West Coast here, we don't have really long hot summer. And so it's a great way of growing plants that maybe have a longer season and need more time to ripen, to mature. So you can start your plants earlier in a greenhouse. You can extend the harvesting period of your fruits and your vegetables in a greenhouse. You can control the environment. In a really wet summer, they're protected from the rain. So there's lots of advantages to growing in a greenhouse. Tomatoes, cucumbers, eggplants, those are all plants that thrive in a greenhouse environment. You can extend your leafy vegetables right through, you can start them very early in the season. And you can be harvesting pretty much right through. I know we can be harvesting our, things like beet tops and certain varieties of spinach right through the winter in a greenhouse. So that makes it really easy and nice to have those fresh vegetables on your garden, on your plate, even in the middle of winter.
There are, I think maybe all of us know how funny it is when you say that you're just going to plant one zucchini. I wonder, is there any plants like that? Zucchini just keep going and going and going, don't they?
It just goes and keeps producing. We're all familiar with those people who are giving away all the zucchini because they planted four or five plants. So they've got tens and twenties of zucchinis that they're giving away at any given time.
Yeah. I noticed on your website that you do some workshops. Would that be for training?
We do. We do a lot of different workshops.
Mm-hmm.
We do workshops for moss hanging baskets, for perennial planting in containers, a lot of mixed containers. I love container gardening because it allows everybody to garden, whether you live in a condo or an apartment. Whether you're renting or whether you own, it doesn't matter. It's a great way to bring seasonal color up close to your house in times when you normally wouldn't be out in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of workshops, including container gardening. We do a lot of cooking classes with herbs and fresh spring vegetables, heirloom tomato workshops, all sorts of different things. And then in the winter season, we'll do winter containers. We'll do fresh garlands and green wreaths and centerpieces for Christmas, all sorts of different things.
Mm.
And so we're in the process of building a bistro here. We're adding a bistro to our lineup. And my daughter is a chef, so she's going to be bringing those skills to Tangle Bank as well. So we're going to be able to even do more cooking classes and bring fresh food to the table.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know I can see as I go by that it's really coming along. Is there an estimated time of opening?
Well, we're hoping for this spring. We're hoping for April.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how building projects are. You try and you aim, and
yeah. The
rest is up to whatever.
Yeah.
So it's coming along nicely, and we're all anxious to get started here. Absolutely.
I know, you're very connected with many of the farmers and the people in the Bradner area, particularly in this area. And I just wanted to know, is there a concern about the land and what's happening with the land? Are we still able to preserve enough land to grow good food and sustain us in this area?
Absolutely.
Good.
You know, pressure is always on farmland to preserve it. It's, you know, there's so many things vying for the use of that farmland. We see more and more other industries coming in wanting to take up farmland. I think it's very important that we try to maintain farmland, that we do our best to locate other businesses who may need land but who don't need farmland, to make sure that we do our best to try to get those businesses to locate land that's not necessarily agricultural land. We see a lot of things vying for attention for farmland, so it's definitely something that we have to work hard to preserve, because
mm-hmm.
as more and more people move into the area, there's just more and more people wanting to live on farmland. Farmland is beautiful, and who doesn't want to live beside a pasture with cows in it and, you know,
right.
a few horses? And so it's, it's definitely in demand, and so it's always a challenge to maintain that land for farming. There's lots of land, but it's just, you know, it's just preserving that land and making sure that it's preserved for farming so that we can continue to grow our own food and not be reliant on other sources for our food.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, too, when people are working with soil and with land and planting, I would say that I guess the land itself, after you grow a lot of things in it, you need to re-nourish it, do you?
Absolutely. It's always important to give back to the land. And I think we tend to, most people, I think, we want to keep our landscapes really pristine. We live in, you know, in areas where, you know, we want it to be weed-free year-round, and we don't like the look of leaves or clutter in our ground. And I always recommend to people, the first thing you can do is let Mother Nature take its course, and over the course of winter, let leaves fall on your beds and let them break down and go back into the soil. It also protects the plants. Another thing you can do is add mulch to your gardens. Mulch is an incredible way to make life as a gardener much, much easier. I know I get a lot of customers who say, I don't like the look of mulch, and I just want soil. And that's great. But mulch really, really does help planting. It helps the plants survive a whole lot better. It feeds the ground. It keeps the ground warm. It's like a blanket in the winter, so it acts like an insulator in the wintertime to keep the plants protected from harsh, cold winds and wet and all sorts of things. It breaks down and breaks down into the soil and feeds the soil. It allows for critter life, you know, those things that crawl around in the soil. Those are usually good things.
Mm-hmm.
And the more critters you see in your soil, generally the healthier your soil is. So we like to see lots of earthworms and things like that. If you're not seeing any critters, well, then that probably means that your soil's not real healthy and can't support those animals, those little things that feed your soil, and they act, those earthworms, they aerate your soil, and they make sure that there's lots of oxygen available to the plants and allows rain to, it softens the soil so rain can penetrate. And so by adding mulches to the garden, those mulches encourage that animal life that you need in your garden. They help in the summertime. They act as an insulation from the sun, so actually your garden will preserve water and reserve that water for the plants' use, and it won't be lost to evaporation due to the sun. So there's all sorts of reasons to mulch your gardens. And the number one reason I tell people, even if they don't like the look, is it's going to make your life so much easier. You know, that mulch covers those weed seeds that will spring up. So if you can put a nice thick layer of mulch on your garden, you know, I recommend usually 3 to 4 inches thick at least. When you're starting a bed, I'll even tell people go 6 inches just to get a really good start on it. Mm-hmm. And then you can top it up with a couple of inches every couple of years just to keep it looking fresh and keep refeeding that soil. But it keeps those weed seeds buried, and it makes weeds much, much easier to pull. I know a lot of people say, well, what about landscape fabric? Should I use landscape fabric? And I personally find that, you know what, spend the money on your mulch instead of the landscape fabric. By putting down a good layer of mulch, you're going to kill all the weeds, the same weeds that that landscape fabric would kill. And it weeds will blow in from the top, and so the roots grow through the landscape fabric. And then when you go to pull that root or that weed, you pull the top off, and the root is left to grow underneath the landscape fabric. And the only way you can get it now is to either rip the landscape fabric or rip it up or dig down and cut a hole in it, in which case you're defeating the whole purpose of the landscape fabric. So spend your money on mulch. Mulch is a great way to feed your garden. And what I usually recommend for, you know, one of the easiest mulches, and it works really, really good, is just a plain bark mulch. Sometimes if I'm starting a new garden, I'll tell people, you know, make sure you've got good topsoil. And if your soil is really bad, then you can add, you know, there's different kinds of compost. At times we've introduced mushroom compost or horse manure or cow manure or even pig manure, just something to add humus, organic matter to your soil that's going to feed it, because plants need food just like we need food. And so by keeping the ground raked perfectly clean all the time, the soil can't feed itself. So we want to make sure that we add mulch. I'm not a big advocate for a lot of unnecessary feeding plants with a lot of different foods. I like organic when I do feed them. And I find that an organic-based fertilizer once in a while is more than adequate. We don't need to overfeed our plants if you've got them in a good, healthy soil to begin with. Yeah.
I just want to mention to those that are listening in tonight that you can call in toll-free and ask Brenda any questions that you like about gardening or any questions. And the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. So that's 888-627-6008. Please feel free to call in, and it is a toll-free call. So now, Brenda, when I look out here, and I know, I don't know, maybe even in the city, what about all those moles? Are we inundated with moles? How do you keep moles away from gardens, or can you?
Moles are wonderful little pests that just make our life just so fun. That there's nothing like stepping in a molehill. great for sprained ankles. You know, moles eat pests. They eat things in the garden. And so typically there's not a whole lot you can do to keep moles away. I mean, we hire a mole man. He is great at catching moles and releasing them. And I recommend cats highly. Cats are awesome at keeping my mole population away. They scare them away. They don't seem to come around. So if you got a few cats in the neighborhood, that's always a good deterrent. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's one of those things in life. You know, they eat your roots. They eat your crops, and they eat tulip bulbs and all sorts of nice things. So, yeah, they can be a real nuisance when you have a problem, and they're notorious for destroying beautiful lawns. But yeah, they eat bugs. So if there's bugs in the soil, they're going to be there. They're going to eat. Put a trap in? What's that?
I was just going to say, do you have to find out what kind of soil you have
for gardening?
Yeah.
You know, soil is definitely important. It's a good thing to know what kind of soil you have. There's different kinds of soil you can have. Generally, in our area, it's either a really heavy clay, which is probably the most challenging to grow in, simply because things tend to rot in the wintertime. Clay holds moisture. And so in the summertime, clay is great because plants and gardens planted in heavy clay don't dry out as fast. And so they tend to, and the clay also has a lot of nutrients, and clay soil is very nutrient rich. But it does have the disadvantage of holding a lot of water in the wintertime. So clay soil can allow for a lot of winter rot. Light sandy soils have a great advantage of being well drained in our wet winters, so we don't see a lot of rot happening. They're a little bit more challenged in the summertime because you have to water them more. The water runs through the pores of the sand quite a bit quicker, so you have to add more water to your garden. The ideal is to have a nice loam, you know, that nice light, airy soil with lots of organic material in it. And there's very few people who actually have that kind of soil. So what I recommend is if you have either a really sandy, gravelly soil, or if you have a really heavy clay soil, what I recommend is that you add lots of organic material to your garden. Organic material in heavy clay soil is going to open up those pores so that water can drain more freely through it. In sandy soil that has really large pores, the organic material is actually going to close up some of those pores and allow it to hold a little bit more moisture. So in either conditions, adding compost to your garden, adding organic matter, leaf mold, bark mulch, straw, anything like that is going to open up the pores in your heavy clay soil, lessen the size of the pores in sandy soil, and it's going to add food and nutrients to your soils. And it's going to just help make a nicer soil. So again, I can't say enough about mulch. I go through a ton of mulch because it's just a great way to improve my soil, feed my soil, protect the plants, aerate my soil. You definitely want to take a look at your soil. Now, saying that, if you have a heavy gravel soil, and in some areas of my garden, I have planted, no matter what kind of soil I have, I've just planted straight into that. What I've done is I have one area in my garden, and it's all gravel. It was the remains of a building site, and it was in an awkward position. It was near a creek, and I didn't want to disturb it. I didn't want to have to do the manpower to amend all that soil. So what we did is we created a scree garden or a gravel garden there. So we planted plants into that area that actually like gravel, that actually don't like a rich, moist soil, that like it lean. And when you think of that, think of, you know, rock. What kind of plants grow in rocky, gravelly regions? And so we took a look at those kind of plants and planted those into those gardens. In some areas, we know we have large patches of lavender and different alpine plants and scree plants and sedums and hens and chicks and things like that grow in very gravelly soil, and we didn't have to add any soil to it. And then we made that bed, into this little rockery, I call it my garrigue garden. It's a French term for an area in France where the scrublands meet the grasslands, and so it's a very think thyme and lavender and those kind of grassy plants included. So we just made a mulch of gravel over top of that area and let those plants, and they love it. They don't like heavy soils. They don't like lots of food. They like it lean. They like it dry. And so the sandy, gravelly area is actually perfect for those plants, and they're quite happy there. In another area, I have really heavy clay soil, and it tends to be a little shady. So I found plants that really didn't mind those conditions. We planted perennial geraniums and begonias and some different ferns and things that didn't mind being a little dry in the winter, in the summertime, didn't mind a little winter wet, and actually could handle the heavy clay. So basically it's just taking a look. If you want to amend the soil, you can improve your soil so that you can plant a wider variety of plants. Or you can take a look at your soil and say, you know what, I'm not prepared to do that work and add that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick plants that will grow in those environments. And there's always a plant that will grow in just about any kind of environment. If you've got a really soggy, wet soil, think of stilbes and radiersias and plants that like a little bit more moisture. So there's always something you can plant in even the most difficult garden area or garden soil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What I also wanted to ask you about, and last year we did a very weak attempt of planting something. However, I think it's like your eyes are bigger than your stomach type of thing. By the time we got to the other end of the garden, the weeds had already started at the first end. But there's got to be, I think one thing I've learned is don't get too big or you get discouraged.
Well, this is true. Start small. Pick one bed. Even, you know, I even tell people, start with one container. Start with whatever you've got, you know. It might be one container where you plant three or four different perennials in it, or one small bed in the middle of a garden, in the middle of a lawn. You know, it might start with a tree that you've planted in the middle of the lawn. We all tend to, you know, want to plant a tree in our yard. And so you plant a tree in the middle of your yard, and now you've all of a sudden you've got a little circle of a garden bed. You know, maybe find three or four plants that go with that tree and start small. You don't have to tackle the whole garden at one time. I do a lot of design consulting for customers. And so when I go through a yard, I'll plan for the whole garden, but then I'll give them a step-by-step. You start here. Start with this one area at a time so they're not overwhelmed. This is a process. It doesn't have to all be done in one day. And I usually tell people, if I'm planting a garden, if you want to start simple and you don't want to get too complicated, I always tell people, start with the things that take the longest to mature. And that's usually going to be a tree. So I always tell people, you know, start with a tree. Start with two or three trees in your yard. They're easy to plant. They're easy to look after. They really have no maintenance other than a little bit of watering to get them established and maybe the odd little bit of pruning. If there's disease or if there's, you know, issues with the tree. But basically, start with a tree. I always tell people, trees will take 3 years after you plant them before you even notice that they began to grow. So don't waste time. Don't wait till next year to plant the tree. Plant the tree this year. Shrubs and perennials, you can plant them in the garden and, you know, within 1 or 2 years, you've got a nice size plant that you notice in the garden. And so pick one or two, you know, pick an area, pick one bed or pick three trees that you want. You know, you want a tree in the front yard and a couple of trees in the backyard for shade or to hang a hammock on. Start there. Start with a couple of trees. They will give you the most bang for your buck, and they will add shade in the summertime. They act as air conditioners. So if you live in a really hot neighborhood, you know, plant some trees. It's going to cool your house. It's going to give you a place to enjoy in the summertime. It's going to give you beauty. It's going to give you some structure in the garden in the wintertime so you're not looking out on a barren landscape. So I always tell people, start small. Start with a tree or two. And start with a container garden. You know, find your love of gardening. And it's really easy to pick plants. I usually tell people when you're picking, you know, pick three plants. But look for different contrasts. I usually tell people, look for something that's kind of spiky, whether it's a tree, whether it's a nice big grass, something that has kind of spiky foliage. And then I'll look for something, another plant that maybe has a large, you know, a large round leaf. It could be a hosta. It could be a rhododendron. It could be a hydrangea, something that has nice, broad, big leaves. And then what I'll look for is maybe something that grows low and round to sort of add some filler in the ground so you're building structure. And look at foliage. People tend to want to buy, you know, you go into the garden center and you see all these beautiful little flowers and they all look great and you're drawn to the flowers. But most plants flower for, you know, relatively short periods of time. There are the odd exception, but on average, most of them will bloom for a month to 2 months. And the rest of the time, you're either left with leaves or with a plant that will go dormant. And so what I tell people is look at the foliage. Don't just look at the flower. Look at the foliage and try to find different color, different kinds of foliage that look good together. And don't be afraid to put them on a cart, drag the cart around the nursery, and look at them together and see what they look like. And then read the tag. because there's nothing worse than planting a plant that is going to outgrow your spot too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So read the tag. That cute little plant in that little one-gallon pot. I can always remember my first experience buying a perennial. When I first started perennial gardening, a lot of people didn't know a whole lot about perennials. They were new and they were interesting, but there wasn't a whole lot of information. And the tags back then just told you what it was. They didn't tell you what it did. And so I remember buying this 4-inch little pot perennial, and I planted it in the garden, and it became this 8-foot giant of a perennial. And it ran like crazy. And all of a sudden I had this big, 10-foot swath of 8-foot giant plants, and it was overwhelming, and it was like, okay, how come nobody told me it was going to get this big?
I know.
It kind of took off on me. Pardon me?
I think one of the biggest April Fool's joke is give somebody a gundra.
Exactly. Kind of like that. And so, I think, read the tag. Find out about the plant before you buy it. Find out how big it's going to get. If it's going to get 6 feet wide, don't plant it in a place that you've only got 2 feet of room. If you've got a 2x2 area to put a plant, don't pick a 6-foot wide rhododendron. There are different size plants, so if you want a rhododendron, pick a miniature. If you need height, pick a plant that's only going to get 1.5 to 2 feet around and it's going to get tall. So really read tags, find out how big they're going to get, and most tags will give you a finished size, and that size is usually a 10 to 15 year size. It's not necessarily how big it's going to be in 25 years. It's generally a 10 to 15 year. So if it says it grows to 10 feet, that's probably it's going to grow to 10 feet in 10 years. So if you're going to be there longer, or if you plan on having a landscape that's going to last much longer than that, then plan on giving it more room than it says on the tag. Generally, when most landscapers landscape a plant, they plant it with a 10 to 15 year plan, and then they expect that you're going to have to go through it and redo it. So if you don't want to do that, give your plants extra room. Give them more room than they call for, especially in large trees and shrubs. It's really important to read tags and find out just how big they're going to be. I get a lot of customers who say, my hydrangea is 6 feet and I wanted it 2 feet. The problem is a hydrangea like that blooms, a lot of them bloom on old wood, and if I cut it back, I'm going to lose all the flowers. So if I have to cut a 6-foot hydrangea back to 2 feet every year, I may as well rip that hydrangea out or give it away to a friend and put in a hydrangea that's only going to get 2 feet tall. And there are hydrangeas that will only get 18 inches tall. So there are choices. So I always tell people, read the tag and look and see how big that plant is really going to get. If it doesn't say on the tag, feel free to ask the people who work there to check check a book. Tell me how big it's going to get in the end, so that you don't make a mistake. You don't buy the wrong plant for the wrong spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of my mantra, right plant for the right spot, and anything will grow.
Yeah. Good one. What do you do about snails?
Snails. Well, I kind of go around with a bucket and I collect them. They're, and I have a granddaughter who is 2.5, and she's not afraid of snails. Most kids love snails. They collect them, they put them in their pockets. So take your grandchild out or your child out and go on a snail hunt. They'll learn lots, they'll have fun, and you'll get rid of your snails. The best time to do your snail hunt is in the morning.
Oh, really? Well, I think they're like little moles. There's no shortage of snails.
There's no shortage of snails. Actually, one of the ways that you can eliminate snails and slugs in your garden is to, in the spring, after the winter is finished, make sure you rake up all the leaves and debris that have fallen and settled over the winter. Leave them on over the winter. They protect your plants.
Yep.
But in the spring, make sure that you clean them all up, that you don't give the slugs and snails a place to hide. Slugs and snails usually will hide underneath, all that excess debris laying on the ground. So generally, go out there, clean it up, and don't give them a place. There's always slug and snail traps that you can set.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, I find that generally they're gonna be there. They've always been there. They're going to continue to be there. So I don't get overly upset when I see slugs and snails. That's just part of garden life. And if I have too many, I just go on a hunt and collect them. But one of the worst things you can do is, use pesticides to kill slugs and snails. Snakes eat slugs and snails and all that funny stuff. But when they eat them, and those slugs and snails have been treated to pesticides, the snakes can die. And snakes, once they're dead, they're dead. They don't continue to give birth, and they don't lay tons of eggs. They give live birth. So when you kill one snake, you've killed all its future progeny. The problem with slugs and snails is they've laid thousands of eggs. And so even though you killed that one slug or snail, you've still got thousands of eggs. So your snake is going to do your garter snake is going to eat a whole lot more than you can ever kill with pesticides. So leave them there. Encourage healthy critter life into your garden. I know nobody likes to come across a snake when they're gardening, but snakes can be some of your best friends in the garden. So now saying that, I mean, garter snakes aren't a big deal. Snakes might be another issue somewhere else, but here they're not really an issue. Don't use pesticides for your slugs and your snails. Go out there, collect them, use a beer trap, those kind of things that won't harm anything, won't harm any other animal life that's going to come and eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, take your kids out and have a learning expedition.
You bet.
Yeah.
I've got a whole bunch of grandchildren, too, and I just love it when they come out here. And they can take their feet off the concrete and put it on the ground and walk around.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Gardening is great to build family. My kids have grown up. I have four children, and they grew up on a farm. And they didn't play inside. They didn't play on computers. They were outside from morning till night. And I remember my oldest daughter, I'd come home from being away with the girlfriends for a weekend, and I'd come home, and her and her dad had built a garden. One time they built a secret garden. The second time they built a pond garden. And every time I came home, she was out there with her dad building another garden. And it's interesting that when she graduated from school, she says, "Mom, I'm going to be a landscape designer because I can't imagine working anywhere but outside." And so gardening, there's something about working in a garden, even as a young child. She's just always enjoyed being outside in the garden. And all my kids, all four of them, love gardening and love being out there with us. And we always tease that we're going to advertise that if you want a really cool experience, you can come and garden with the folks and spend a day with us all gardening outside because we have a hoot. Yeah, and they're all grown up now. Two of them are married, and we still have a great time in the garden together. So it's a great way to get exercise, and it's great for kids to learn.
Brenda,
great learning experience for them.
I now have a great grandchild, and I'm looking at the young people today, and the cost of food. And
yes,
what in your estimation, size of a garden would maybe a couple and a baby be able to sustain to get vegetables and or whatever from the land, but primarily things to eat?
I've never really thought about that, so I really can't answer to say how much they would need to actually sustain them. But what I do encourage people is if you've never vegetable gardened, it's really easy to start, and there are lots of beautiful varieties of vegetables that are being produced these days. And, I mean, I remember one time I had a lavender bed, and I planted a burgundy lettuce with my lavender. And I was amazed that people would come in the garden, and they would stand in this section of the garden, and I noticed that there was this one section of the garden that they would stand in, and they would just stare at it. And they could spend 15, 20 minutes, half an hour in this one section of my garden. And so one day I asked the customer, what are you looking at? What do you see when you're looking? Because, when you're the gardener, sometimes you don't see things the way other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just amazed that I was growing my vegetables and my lavender and my perennials together. I had roses and lavender, and I had this red lettuce, and I had some beautiful rainbow-colored Swiss chards. and they were in awe at how pretty it looked. But the nice thing about that garden was I ate pretty much everything that was there. The rose petals and the rose hips from the roses go into jelly, but they look great. They're a structural shrub plant. My lavender goes into my biscotti and my biscuits, and the lettuce and the Swiss chard were a regular part of my diet. But it was interesting because we combined these plants that typically, like roses and lavender, that people think of as just a flower and perennial. And then we combined it with our vegetables and our herbs. And people were in shock that, you know what, I never thought of doing that. I never thought of combining a few vegetables in with my flowers. And anybody can do it. You know, add a few strawberry plants in with your ground covers. Or, add a tomato plant in your container or your hanging basket. There's all sorts of varieties of tomatoes that, you know, we can grow in hanging baskets. We can grow in containers. We can add them in the garden bed. And so, you know, you don't necessarily need a vegetable garden to garden vegetables in. They can be snuck into, you know, any hole in the garden, depending on the vegetable you're putting in. And so, you know, planting your peas in with your sweet peas and your roses on vines or clematis, let them clamber up the trellis as well. So there's all sorts of ways to add vegetables and add fruit into your garden. Blueberry bushes are absolutely gorgeous landscape plants, and you know they add. You get the beautiful white flowers in the spring. You get beautiful blueberries in the summer. You get this beautiful foliage. The blueberries turn these beautiful shades of burgundies and oranges and reds, depending on the variety. And then they've usually got beautiful red stems and twigs in the winter months. So you've got a shrub that gives you fruit, but also is incredibly beautiful in your landscape. And so, you know, who doesn't want that? It's a four-season plant. It always is great, and you get the added benefit of eating it.
Absolutely.
Anybody can go a vegetable garden. It's just a really easy way, but just all it takes is just one plant. Just start with one plant, and you're hooked. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, we're in blueberry country, aren't we? So,
we are in blueberry country. I'm surrounded by blueberry fields, and I love it.
Yeah. Do they need light? Do they need a lot of sun? Or can you put them in a shady area?
Blueberries need full sun.
Okay.
Blueberries are definitely a full sun plant. Most fruiting plants are going to need sun. So if you want to grow vegetables and you've got full shade, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge for you. So I don't recommend, you know, vegetable gardening if you've got a full shade or a very shady garden. But if you've got lots of sun or if you've got an area of the garden that has lots of sun, put your vegetables there. Combine them with some other plants, and you've got a very useful garden.
Well, picturing all of the things that you've been talking about tonight, and so helpful. I mean, it seems like such a daunting task to begin a garden, especially when you don't know anything about it. I mean, it was like me, it was like asking me to change the transmission in my car. I didn't have the first clue. And I knew that my history with indoor plants wasn't too great. But I really, really now have a passion to begin to grow a garden, and I want to grow one that's the right size, not too much maintenance. Like, there's a certain amount of maintenance in gardening, so you've got to really
realize
that.
There's no such thing as no maintenance gardening, but there is low maintenance gardening by picking the right plants.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely recommend when people are starting a garden to ask questions. Like, when you go to a garden, there's all sorts of new varieties. There's all sorts of fancy plants. Ask your garden specialist, ask them, give me a foolproof plant, there are lots of plants out there that grow with relatively no work whatsoever. They just grow. You don't do anything to them. They just want to grow, and there's lots of plants that will grow in almost any soil. So, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. I always find, you know, people come in and they say, oh, that's probably a stupid question. It's like, no, the only question that's stupid is the one you don't ask. you know, we can't all know everything. And so just because you don't know the answer to the question doesn't mean it's a stupid question. By all means, feel free to ask. That's what we're here for. I mean, most people that work in a nursery, it's our passion. It's what we do. It's like going to the doctor's office and, you know, he's going to know stuff about your health that you don't know because he's specialized in it. So it's like that when you go into a nursery. Ask questions. Feel free to ask questions and to, you know, trial and error and ask them what's successful for them and what plants do they find easy to grow. Ask questions. Ask lots and lots of questions. And, you know, we're so fortunate. We live in the day of Google.
Yeah.
And, you know, even as, you know, I rely heavily on Google because there's so many plants that I don't know. There's always new varieties and sometimes the newer varieties I stay away from just for a few years until I see how they're going to perform before I commit to them in my garden. I might put them in a container or something, but I don't necessarily commit in large numbers until I know. So, you know, ask people who know. Ask people who have tried the plants. What do you use? What do you have success with? And very often they'll be able to help you pick the right plants for your garden. Now, you're not always going to like what they pick, but that's just, we all have personal taste. But it gives you a good guideline.
Well, I can truly say that I don't think Tango Bank is a nursery. It's kind of like a painting, like I said earlier. It's a beautiful, it's like a destination. And when you have the bistro in there, that's going to be wonderful. Can people sign up for your newsletter?
Absolutely. They can go to tanglebank.com to our website, and they can check us out there. All the information is there. We love encouraging and helping people succeed. You know, so we started the garden as a place to showcase people and show people what perennials are going to look like, what they're going to look like in their garden so they can choose the right plant. And I'm amazed at how many times, you know, we've had people come into the garden center, pick out a plant, and then I'm like, okay, go see it in the garden over there. And when they come back, they go, oh, that's totally not the right plant for me, or that I love it and I need three of them instead of one of them. So it's we really believe in teaching people how to succeed because your success is our success. And so we're passionate about what we do. We all love what we do. I can't imagine doing anything else. We're very fortunate that our oldest daughter works with us in the garden center. She's a horticulturalist as well. So my husband and my daughter, Lorraine, and I work together. And now my second daughter is coming in on as a chef, and she's a passionate gardener as well. So she's looking forward to utilizing the plants we grow in the garden into the products that we're going to be selling in the bistro, whether it's a salad or a soup or a dessert. We all love to teach. We all love to share. And so my daughter Kayla is going to be bringing her skills as a chef in so that we can continue to teach people how to use the products that they grow in the garden. And a lot of those plants that grow in the garden that people don't even realize they can eat, like daylilies. Nobody thinks of eating a daylily flower, but you can actually eat a daylily flower.
Wow.
So we love to share, you know, and share our passion with other people, and we all love what we do, so we love to share it.
Well, it has been really lovely talking with you tonight, Brenda. I want to encourage people, if you've got any questions about gardening or starting a garden or how to make your garden beautiful, phone Tango Bank. And the actual address there, Brenda, is could you please give that to us, the address of Tango Bank?
Absolutely. It's 29985 Downs Road, D-O-W-N-E-S, and that's in Abbotsford. And if you want, you can go to our website, and we have directions online that tell you how to get here. And again, that's tanglebank.com. And actually, we're hosting a gardening workshop on February the 25th. That's this a week Saturday. And we're going to be showcasing how to grow hellebores. And they are a beautiful winter spring perennial. They're in bloom in the garden now. And we have plants that are up to 3 feet wide, about a foot and a half tall. And some of the plants have upwards of 350 blooms on them when they mature. So hellebores are a great way to add color to your spring garden. and they come in a variety of colors, blues, purples, reds, yellows, apricots, whites, cinnamon colors. Like, there's just an array of colors and different kinds of plants. So that's coming up this Saturday, or on the 25th of February at 10:30 in the morning.
February.
And if people are interested, they can RSVP.
February 25th at 10:30 in the morning. I also wanted to
mention, that's correct.
You've got a beautiful shop right there.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. And
we love beautiful things, inside and out.
Yeah, and are some of the items in there from locals that, you know, I'm looking at those wonderful candles that you have, and you've got so many different varieties of things.
We try whenever possible. It's not always possible, but whenever it's possible, we like to support local businesses. We are a local business ourselves, so we like to support other local businesses, Canadian businesses. We try very hard to bring in unique products and really well-made products with a variety of price points because we can't all afford the elite of things. So we try to bring in a wide variety of things, a wide variety of price points, but we try to bring in locally made whenever possible, locally made gourmet foods, soaps. We make our own line of soaps, and we're always bringing in new products. So we love Christmas. We have a beautiful Christmas store at Tango Bank. So that's always a lot of fun. But yeah, our motto here is we're cultivating the art of living beautifully. So that covers food, inside, outside. Yeah.
Well, it is certainly, it's a beautiful place to go, and as soon as you come into it, it's like feng shui, isn't it? The way that you drive in.
We call it our little Garden of Eden.
Yeah, and it sure looks that
way.
So thank you so much. Thank you very much. And
you're
welcome. You've taught many people many things tonight, and certainly me. So you'll be seeing more of me when I need a little bit more advice on the garden.
Well, we look forward to it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for having me this evening.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening to our program tonight. Every second Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, The Creative Field, always with new guests, new topics, and all of those topics are about what is possible and what is positive for our future. So thank you all, and we'll see you 2 weeks from tonight. Good night.